and welcome to The Logistics Tribe. I'm Boris Felgendreher, founder of The Logistics Tribe, and today's show is hosted by Dana von der Heide. Her guest is Penny Register Shaw, the Vice President of Last Mile Transportation at Walmart. Penny is having an impressive career in logistics. She's a lawyer by trade and has held a number of influential positions at iconic companies like FedEx and Amazon. And I think it's fair to say that she is an inspiring role model in an industry that could benefit from more female empowerment. And that's what today's edition of the Logistics Tribe is about. But both Penny and Dana are experts in last mile e-commerce deliveries, so they are sharing a lot of valuable insights on this topic. I am super proud to be able to present to you this very special episode of the Logistics Tribe. Let's go.
Okay, welcome everyone. I am particularly excited today to introduce you to our next guest here at the Logistics Tribe. It's no other than Penelope Register Shaw, who is the head of transportation for Walmart, last mile transportation vice president there. But she also has previous experiences with Amazon and FedEx. So no one better to share more about her experience about being a female in the last mile world. Welcome to the tribe, Penny.
Thank you very much. I'm pleased to be here, Dana.
Absolutely.
It's wonderful.
Thank you for dialing in also all the way from the US. We had different time zones changes, and of course the crazy times of COVID to battle with. So really appreciate you making the time and sharing a little bit more about your professional career and maybe some insights on the logistics industry as well.
I'd be happy to, yes. And I noted that there was definitely a time zone difference when I started getting emails from you this morning at 4 a.m. my time. So,
well, that's probably the new work life that we are all dealing with. Yeah, there's
exactly. Never
time off in logistics either. So really appreciate you making it. Penny, I think many of our listeners will probably have heard you. I saw you at many different talks at Post and Parcel Live. We had the honor of being at a panel together. But if you don't mind, especially with your remarkable background in logistics, do you want to give us a short introduction about yourself?
Yeah, that would be wonderful. Thank you. So I started out my work life as an attorney, and I was in private practice for many years, and I advised governmental officials. That was really what I did. So I drafted legislation, I lobbied, I helped them with their debt financing and their budgeting. And through that, I met the governor of Rhode Island, who took a chance with a very young woman and made me the chairman of the Public Transportation Authority. And in that role, I was in charge of moving people around. But there was a very big logistical aspect of that. So I ran the bus system, the ferry system, the light rail system. And I started to learn about density of routing and being on time and not being on time and all of the metrics that then lead into the movement of packages. And so I became very interested in this. I would go to work at the Public Transportation Authority from, say, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m., and then I would go do my day job as an attorney. When I left there after I had my daughter, I started working at FedEx, and I was at FedEx for 20 years in a variety of different roles. But the one that I loved the most was as a member of the Chief Strategy Office. And this was advising the CEO and the COO on ways to expand the footprint of FedEx, not only geographically, but with different product offerings and through acquisitions and adjacent spaces to the air express movement of really B2B type things. And so this gave me a license to hunt, which I'm not sure if that's a Southern phrase, but what it really meant was there was no topic that was off, out of bounds for me. I could be curious about almost anything. And so I was. So after 20 years at FedEx, I was approached by an ex-FedEx person to go to Amazon. And that is where my journey that was totally devoted to last mile began. It was a big shift for me because at FedEx, as I say, I had a range of issues that I could jump from one to the other each day. At Amazon, it is about concentrating on one thing very deeply until you get it right.
Last mile in that case, right?
Yes. And so at Amazon, I learned a whole different skill set, which we can come back to. But I'm going to just briefly touch on, I worked at a startup in Seattle doing a variety of things and then went to Walmart. Really, I like to call it Jet.com because it was right after the acquisition of Jet.com by Walmart. So it was an expansion for Walmart into a different customer base with different offerings in the last mile space. That, as you know, isn't where Walmart grew up.
So. Absolutely. And you've been there since 2019, right?
Yes, the beginning of 2019.
Fantastic. Yeah, I think for everyone listening, certainly one of the most outstanding female profiles in the logistics industry. So a real honor to have you. And there was so much in there that you mentioned already. I can't wait to kind of use our today's session to look into the details a little bit. And maybe we start at the beginning. A lawyer that then gets into the logistics industry, first transporting people, later transporting parcels and making sure they all arrive on time. Did you think you would end up in the logistics industry right from the start?
No, I didn't really, but I just kept finding myself there. In my role as an attorney and the interest of my clients were all about building a new airport, opening new runways at an existing airport, working on bridges and roads and the infrastructure in their state. And somehow it always was a pathway back to transportation and movement and giving people access. And I didn't quite realize what the common theme was until probably 10 years into it. And I thought, you know, what is it that keeps coming up time and time again? And it was logistics.
Absolutely. And I think in current times where, you know, a ship is stuck in the Suez Canal,
yes,
to vaccines being delivered all over the world, to e-commerce booming, logistics also in my eyes couldn't be a more interesting, more relevant and more impactful industry. But I think we're seeing very few females in the industry still. And I'd love to get your opinion on that later on. But you said one very interesting thing as well. You said there was someone that gave you the chance, a stepping stone into the industry. Can you share a little bit more about the encouragement and maybe also the opportunity you received there?
Yeah, so I moved from the South. You can probably hear that in my voice, that I have a Southern American accent that is very pronounced. I was born in Alabama. I actually only lived in Alabama for 5 years, but this accent took hold and it can get a little bit less and a little bit worse depending on who I'm around. But I moved to New England where I knew no one, and I was so isolated and lonely and homesick, and I had been practicing law maybe 3 years at that time. My husband went there. my first husband, went there in order to attend Brown University. And I met this guy who had just run unsuccessfully for governor. And his name was Joe Walsh. And I think about Joe Walsh at least once a week. But Joe just started taking me around and introducing me to everyone. And he knew everyone in the state of Rhode Island and most people in the state of Massachusetts. And he would tell people how wonderful I was, how smart I was, how energetic I was. And he actually put me on the podium for this speech in front of about 500 people. And he did the introduction of me, and then he walked to the back of the room, and I could see him in the back sort of sleeping against the wall while I was speaking. And but the speech went very well, and as we were driving back to the office, I said to him, well, you said XYZ in your introduction of me. He said, how did you know that I was confident and brilliant and an expert in this area? And he said, I didn't. he just believed in me and and put me out there and supported me. And he became my first and probably best mentor.
And this is such an amazing story. And I'm so grateful you're sharing it with us, because I think we all know so many people from different backgrounds, with different obstacles to deal with. But I think we all just really need someone that believes in us and gives us the opportunity and the encouragement to take the step. And might it be a step into a specific industry or just a step on the podium? I think we all really need our Joe Welches out there. But this was just the start of your career in the logistics industry. Maybe you share with us a little bit on the move to FedEx. We all know them, logistics giants, so to say, where you were in a very interesting, super exposed position to actually talk about the strategies. What was it that kind of got you there? And maybe also, what was one of the exciting things you worked on?
Yeah, so when I got to FedEx, I was shocked and surprised to learn that FedEx didn't just move these overnight letters. That was my sort of concept of FedEx before I got on the inside. And I'm a voracious reader, and FedEx laid out its the way it operated very clearly. They have a phrase called people service profit. So there was a people manual that talked about how you treat the people. There was a service guide that talked about what were the product offerings and when the pickup would be and when the cutoff times would be. And there was a profit manual that talked about how you approved financial decisions and contracting. And I read those documents probably 15 times in my first 5 weeks of being with the company. And really was able to get a very firm grasp on what it was that FedEx said yes to and what it was that FedEx said no to. And that was a really great foundation for me. And from that, I could talk to the people who were innovators within the company, knowing what the background was, what the history of the company was, and then how the company needed to move forward in order to be relevant. I probably joined after FedEx had been in existence almost 25 years. Mm-hmm. And FedEx really had a desire at that time to be relevant and innovative and a leader for the next 25 years. So formed a team of people charged with reinventing FedEx. That was the mission and the goal. And they did not want a lawyer on that at all. So I was sent to, as a lawyer on this team to, but not as a member. And I was really supposed to be, I see in retrospect, spying on what people were doing. But
making sure everything is correct and in the legal bounds, yeah?
Yes, yes. But after I had been participating for about 2 weeks, they said, oh, wait, we want her on the team because she brings this very different perspective to what we're doing. And she is always the one that if we're trending towards a group think kind of outcome, she's the one that's going to pull us back from that. So I was really flattered.
Absolutely. And I mean, in these times, probably diversity on so many aspects wasn't a big issue yet, or basically a bit matter of the mind and the heart, but like valuing diverse opinions obviously played a big role already. How was it actually when you look back into the years at FedEx, you know, you a woman that is not from the industry entering, you know, very exposed roles in the strategy department, were there a lot of other female powerhouses around you?
There were probably five or six of us that over the course of a 4-year period came onto the team and off of the team, because it really was set up to be a rotation. You always wanted fresh thoughts and fresh people cycling in and off of the team. Now, some people didn't work out very quickly, and I will say that as a general rule, male or female, it was people who came from the marketing department, because they really had an eye. They, as I said at the beginning, we had these guides that were very, very clear about what FedEx was and what FedEx wasn't, and they could not break out of that mold to see what was possible. And but yes, there were other very strong, opinionated women on the team, and I loved that. But one way in which the team was organized that really played to one of my weaknesses, actually, was that on every single topic, every single person had to give some comment. So, okay. Yeah, it was a very deliberately organized structure where you went not necessarily around a circle, but whatever the topic was, you had to hear from everyone. So the same voices weren't drowning out other voices every single time.
But then it could have played to one of your strengths, no? You said that might have been a weakness?
Well, a weakness in that I tend to speak very slowly. I tend to have a halting voice. I tend to take long pauses while I'm talking. But when it was my turn, no one could interrupt me. No one could say, yeah, yeah, that's my idea. That's exactly what I was going to say, you know, and take the ball away from you, which happens.
Well, that's a very fortunate position for a new joiner to be in, right? At least you have the time to express your opinion. So probably also a helpful setting for someone new to the industry, no?
Absolutely. And I think in general for women, that's a good way for meetings to be structured, because a lot of times women are standing back, and I don't mean to be overly general here, but it is hard to be the loudest one in the room, to get attention, to have your ideas heard and or validated. I think we've all been in a meeting where you say something and then 15 minutes later, the person sitting at the front of the table says exactly the same thing, and all of a sudden, it's the most brilliant idea anyone's ever heard.
Yeah, I still wonder whether that happens to more women than men, but maybe our listeners have an opinion on that. Feel free to add your comments wherever you saw this this post. We would be very curious to hear. Penny, since you brought it up, and I'm sure, you know, it wasn't always like that in your future career, did you feel like your behavior changed in the logistics industry? How did you make sure your voice always gets heard?
Yeah, I tried very hard not to lose the core of who I was. And the core of who I am is to, and I've taken a lot of the personality tests and online quizzes and things like that over the years to know that what really drives me is to help others, acts of service. So I tried very hard not to lose that part of me that could identify when somebody was struggling and might need help and assistance. But there was an opposing force to that, which was to be very matter of fact, either very black and white, either you hit the delivery time or you didn't. There are no ifs, ands, or buts around there. And
specifically in transportation, right?
Yes.
It's either there or it's not, huh?
Exactly. And no excuses and no exceptions. And so, it was a bit of a struggle because lawyers are always looking for to establish the facts, but are looking for, I'd say the edge cases, maybe. Mm-hmm. That's the training of a lawyer. And that's not what you should be doing in the logistics space. You should be very black or white and firm and confident.
Absolutely. And I mean, you seem to have mastered it because FedEx, despite being there for, I think, over 16 years, right? Wasn't even the last stage in your career, but you moved on to Amazon. I think, yeah, yes. In recent times, everyone knows Walmart or Amazon. They are maybe becoming the next logistics giant. I'm sure you have an opinion on that, but maybe share a little bit about your time at Amazon, if you don't mind, and how you got there.
Yeah, so I actually was in Seattle for an officer and directors meeting for FedEx. And this was in the summer of 2015. And I stayed over on the weekend to attend two concerts. And the first one was One Direction. And I had convinced three of my friends to stay over and see One Direction with me. And we, just as an aside, we went into the concert space and they kept trying to direct us to the holding pen where the parents were waiting for their children to come out.
No.
And I kept saying, oh no, I have fifth row seats. I'm on the floor, you know. But anyway, I had stayed for the One Direction concert and the Rush concert. And when I was at the Rush concert, I ran into someone who had been at FedEx, who I had gone through this leadership training with. And I really admired, liked this guy. He was brilliant. And sometime during the following week, he called me up and said, you know, I've been thinking about a role for you at Amazon. And I was intrigued by that. And the first role that he described to me was around building an indirect air carrier for Amazon. And that was very appealing to me because that certainly played on the core of FedEx when I joined, which was as a cargo airline and an indirect air carrier. And I had been working in that area for about 9 years, trying to expand air freight forwarding at FedEx. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, it turned into this last mile space. And his vision was that I could come in and build a last mile delivery network while avoiding some of the pitfalls that FedEx had encountered in that area through their mm-hmm. use of independent contractors. And so that was really what my mission was, to build something that was scalable and sustainable and yet took a lot of lessons from the history of others who had gone down this road and perhaps been faced with class action lawsuits or attorney generals coming in and challenging the business model or the Department of Labor. And so I could bring both of the things that I was confident that I was good in to the table.
Awesome. Absolutely impressive. And basically, can you share a little bit, what was the stuff that you directly impacted for those of us who've been using Amazon at the time?
Well, it was really what's called the delivery service provider at the time is what mm-hmm. the name was, delivery service provider network. It's now called the delivery service partner network. And it had been started in the UK maybe 3 years before I joined Amazon. And in the UK, it was an entirely independent contractor network. And then in the US, it was started a little more recently, and it was a number of companies who then employed drivers on behalf of that were dedicated to Amazon work. And so what I found was a fairly loose configuration of service providers, lots of experimentation and innovation about how to organize this program, and also one that had just encountered some fairly negative press. So mm-hmm. I had, my idea was I need to stabilize this network and get through my first peak and prove that this is a very viable delivery option during that first peak, which was in 2016. And another person that I had known at FedEx gave me fairly good advice, I thought, which was at Amazon, you prove yourself during peak. So I had been there about 2 months, but I was determined that I was going to prove myself in peak of 2016. So then all of 2017 was spent on, again, I called it stabilizing the program, which was having a set of guidelines on how you selected vendors, what the scorecard was for the vendors, what metrics they were expected to hit, when we would review them with them. Safety, very high on my agenda, if not number one, giving them the training and the tools to be safe on the road.
Yeah. Very important one for sure. And maybe for everyone listening, I think picking the right last mile service provider is probably something that moves a lot of our listeners as well. Maybe from your experience, do you have like 2-3 things that you feel maybe are often overlooked, but should be extremely important next to the safety measures that you already mentioned. What's the stuff people should look out for more when they choose their last mile providers?
Yeah, well, I'm going to prove right now that I'm a lawyer. part of the due diligence that I thought was important was looking at the financial backing of the companies that we were doing mm-hmm. business with. In other words, how long had they been in existence? Had they ever run into a bankruptcy claim or a lot of lawsuits? That was very important to me because I didn't want them distracted by, can I pay my bills? Do I have to go give 15 depositions? I wanted the owners and the company and the employees of that company to be able to focus on the customer obsession piece that Amazon is so known for, of providing perfect delivery. So that was something that I didn't feel got much attention mm-hmm. by the account managers when I joined.
But that's probably also making it super hard for new businesses, startups, yes. kind of people just setting up to then be chosen, right? Because obviously they don't have a long trajectory and, you know, profitability is a difficult matter for many of them. How did you feel about, or how do you feel until today about like partnering with startups, you know, with your local metropolitan delivery guys that just started up? We see like Gorillas and Volt here in Europe, or the guys on a bike roaming around the city, delivering very fast and efficiently. How do you feel about this now, like working with these newcomers in the space?
Yeah, I did learn this at Amazon. You can hold two completely competing ideas at once that seem on their face like they would be mutually exclusive, mm-hmm. but you can have them both beliefs. And I do believe in working with startups and listening to them along their learning journey to figure out, oh, what is it that they face, that almost every one of them will face in their first year of existence, and solving that problem with them or for them. And so that really is what the Amazon iterations on this DSP program are meant to do. Enable new entrepreneurs and through that enablement start addressing what are the common problems that come up over and over again. So I can say for that original set of people, mm-hmm. yeah, I wanted to see a history of operation and metrics and financial viability, but I also wanted to be able to layer in and supported layering in entrepreneurs who would do anything that it took to make a perfect delivery.
Absolutely. And I mean, while you probably get a lot of stability from the existing players, the flexibility usually comes from the newcomers, right? That try to find still the best service and cater to your needs. So yes. Probably a good mix is something to look out for everyone. Anything else? Any other secret ingredient you feel should always be taken into consideration when picking a last mile service provider network?
Yeah, I believe that the people behind the wheels of the trucks or riding the bikes are your brand ambassadors. So mm-hmm. making that delivery person on the front line, your hero, your customer service representative, a representative of your brand is super important. And There's a lot of different ways to do that, but I do know that you can't do that if they have started their day by waiting around for 2 hours and they haven't been allowed to, you know, go to the bathroom So you really have to set those drivers up for success. They are the heroes in this business.
So that was also then always part of your negotiations to make sure that they've been treated in a way that makes them productive, but is also respectful and good for them. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Very much so.
Very cool.
And that gets back to that, me keeping the core of who I am, which is, you know, service to others is really something that, that motivates me, and being able to see that something that I have done directly or indirectly has an impact on improving someone's lives. So
that is fantastic. Absolutely. And how did you, maybe before we move over, we are of course curious to hear more about your time at Walmart as well. But since we have the rare occasion to have two females talking about logistics, how did you feel maybe also at Amazon about, you know, a woman promoting women? How can we make this industry more relevant to all the female talent out there? Was there an aspect in your time at Amazon that helped you promote that?
Yes. I'm going to back up just for a moment. There was a time in my life where I just had my head down doing whatever task was immediately in front of me. Again, to use sort of a Southern American phrase, it was called shooting the alligator closest to your foot. So whatever alligator or snake is sometimes used to that was closest to my foot, I'd shoot it and then move to the next one. And because of that, I didn't network a lot. I didn't spend a lot of time meeting people, having coffee with them, really getting to know them. At Amazon, I took a different tactic, which was that I really wanted to know the women who were successful in the company and how they supported their teams. And so I did spend a lot of time on that. And then also Amazon is a data-driven company. And so I was able to access the data of when people left their career in logistics and what was that inflection point and what were the factors that caused someone to, a female, to opt out. And so I proposed a program that would help women get through that, that inflection point. I have to say I didn't make much progress on it. I hope it still exists in some form or fashion there and that I left it behind. But that was super important to me because I do think a lot of women, instead of pushing through, will just opt out. And that's not the right answer for them as individuals, and it's not the right answer for this industry.
So, absolutely, and for the business growth as well, right? So what do you feel are the obstacles that a woman should try to see through and maybe, you know, get support on by the ecosystem around this? What did you feel are the most common grounds where maybe the woman gave up too early maybe a good reason for us to tackle, to see more females in the industry going forward?
I think this is going to lead me into some generalizations. And I should start by saying I do respect individuals. So they're, I'm just trying to think of some common themes. I do think that at the time, women start to think about their families, yeah, and having children is a huge point of dropout, where the support that says, please take time off and come back, and you won't be have dug a hole that you'll never get out of, is not always there. Oddly enough, I think as more and more men take paternity leave, it gets easier for women to take maternity leave. But for many years, paternity leave was not, many years of my career, paternity leave was not, you know, a thing. How long has it been a thing in Germany?
Well, in Germany for a bit longer, but I mean, the last few years that I, for example, spent in Asia, there it's still mostly unheard of. Yeah. So, and even there, the maternity leave is relatively short. So I think I absolutely agree with you. There's so much to be done. But the more men that go through the same kind of hurdles, and maybe also the challenges of coming back, you know, finding your old job, maybe handled by someone else for a while, or maybe not even be able to get it back. I think the more men that experience this, and this is probably more generic across the industry, the easier it might get for women to then get the same opportunities despite having a break to focus on the family, right?
Yeah. So I think that is one of the points at which there needs to be more support and encouragement for women in the industry. I also think that there needs to be a more formalized mentor program. I mentioned Joe Walsh, and that was just serendipity that he came into my life and was a cheerleader and supporter for me. But you know, it shouldn't be left to chance. Do have a champion, do appoint a mentor who will help you through those things, where, and not judge you, and it won't be part of your performance review. It will just be supportive.
I think we all need a Joe Walsh in our lives that encourages us. I think we talked about it before, and mentors are a great way to get there. And to probably also, when you come to a new industry or a new business, to have an easier way in, you know, to not always have the formal conversation with your colleagues, but to have someone to ask in a little bit more of a casual setting.
Yes. And then I think a very good understanding that the pie is not finite. In other words, if there is one woman who gets a very large slice of the pie, doesn't mean there's no pie left for the next woman, if that analogy makes sense. I do think for many years it was presented to women, we already have one woman at the table. When she dies or retires, we'll get another one. But, you know, until then, we don't need another woman. And I hope that's not what the current generation faces, but that I'm speaking with, an old and dated example, but I don't think so, actually. I think.
Yeah, I'm afraid we wouldn't have this conversation so in depth about these matters if they still wouldn't be relevant for many of us. But maybe also looking a little bit ahead, after a probably very exciting days at Amazon, you then joined Walmart, I think a step in between as well. But maybe tell us also, you know, landing a job at Walmart, how did you get there? Was it another concert, Penny?
pretty much. It actually was. It was the same guy who
I
had. He had left Amazon and gone on kind of a learning journey of his own, and wanted to enable Walmart to offer an alternative to Amazon. I'm very much choosing my words carefully here, and specifically and pointedly. It is not about competing with Amazon. It's about opening up the same type of Amazon alternatives to more people, because Walmart is within 10 miles of 90%. There is a Walmart within 10 miles of 90% of the population. And that the Walmart shopper historically has not been an online shopper. So again, it's making the pie larger, not dividing up a finite pie. So that was really the mission, and there were a number of people who believed enough in this person to follow him to Walmart, and I keep referring back to Jet and to Jet.com, and want to not replicate the path that Amazon had been on, I guess do something somewhat similar without some of the defects that were present along the way at Amazon, only because Amazon was very scrappy and moved quickly and then iterated back to fix those defects later. It was begin without them at Walmart. Mm.
So you're basically trying your best to get things right from the get-go, is it, this time at at Walmart?
Yeah, so that's a very good combination of FedEx, which will study things for months and months and months before it's introduced to the marketplace, and Amazon, who will build something overnight, introduce it, take it down, introduce it on a Monday, take it down on a Wednesday, rebuild it over the weekend, reintroduce it on Monday. So it was somewhere in between those two.
And I can imagine that Walmart has a whole new kind of challenges at hand and opportunities, right? Like you mentioned, they're so close to the people. Almost every Walmart is a micro-fulfillment hub in its own,
yes.
Right? It's so easy to bring things very, very close, extremely close to your doorstep. And I think there have been a lot of changes also lately with Walmart, kind of removing the $35 minimum for the express delivery orders. And you guys made pretty big steps ahead. What would you say are like the exciting things, maybe things Walmart is approaching differently when it comes to last mile transportation?
Yeah, I think you hit up on it just a moment ago. I think the micro fulfillment aspect, and then of course, which moves into micro last mile. So what is the beginning point of a package's journey to the consumer? I think Walmart is doing experimentation on both those fronts and trying to find the right way to attract new customers and serve their old customer in new ways. And a lot of it is ordering online and picking up at store, expanding the footprints at the stores to be those smaller fulfillment centers, picking the right assortment of products that people are wanting to get repeatedly online. I don't think that Walmart wants to be the everything store that that Amazon set out to be. Yeah.
And what impact does that have on the last mile? When you choose a last mile provider now, is there a different set of criteria you're looking for?
Yes, I think it is that geography and cost becomes more important in the Walmart world, because most of Walmart's historic customers have been rural. And so having a service provider that can go into less densely populated zip codes is more important. Yeah. So
this gives a fantastic chance for the smaller businesses, then again, the local heroes, so to say, right?
Exactly. I like that, the local heroes.
And I think one thing that that really reminded me of a very important aspect that you mentioned earlier is you said Amazon is a data company. And I think when it comes to last mile, it's a very metrics driven kind of service where you need to know where are all the parcels at any given point in time. What's your experience with getting the right data for decision making on the last mile? How do you handle this?
Yeah, there are so many numbers that come at you every day. And what I like to know first and foremost about that information that's coming to me is, what is the latency and accuracy of that information? Because unfortunately, a lot of times I am given data that the person handing it to me says right away, right off the bat, you know, there are 20,000 experience points that are missing from this data. And I'll say, okay, so, you know, why am I supposed to rely on this if you've introduced it to me saying it's not complete and it's not accurate? So I think being slavishly devoted to data that might not be accurate is wrong, the wrong way to go. It creates a false sense of confidence in what you're looking at. So let's say we get past that hurdle and what you've been given is accurate and up to date.
And recent, yeah.
Yeah, and recent. Then I still think you need to dive into it deeply and ask about any obvious anomalies in it, and what are the root causes of that data. And then you cannot check your common sense at the door. You have to use your experience, your common sense, to ask those final three or four questions about why did this defect occur and how can we keep it from happening in the future. And is there a way to automate that remediation, or is it always going to be human intervention? And, you know, in this area, there's still a lot of things that are human intervention. And if it's human intervention, then it needs to be about training and training and training.
Absolutely. So getting the right data and then try to make it real time as correct as possible, and any intervention as automatic as you can, is probably
yes.
A little bit of the secret code you can give to our listeners that are optimizing their last mile at the moment.
Thank you for summarizing my rambling that way. That's exactly what I meant to say.
Thank you so much for sharing all your experience, Penny. It's been an absolute pleasure. I'm having a look at the time. I think there's still so much more to talk about, but I think I want to end on maybe what is your encouragement for the women out there that want to enter logistics. Maybe you can share a few tips and tricks that you feel might help them to get the right path and maybe, yeah, a similarly successful career like yours.
Oh, well, thank you. I think if you are a problem solver, someone who likes puzzles, who likes to ferret out little pieces of information and build it together until you see a big picture, that's really what logistics is about to me. It's being able to be very curious and involved in your community and being a problem solver, a sleuth. So I'm going to romanticize the industry a little bit that way. You know, you're the Sherlock Holmes of your era if you enter this this industry, and you are definitely enabling people who otherwise would not have access to goods. You're enabling them to have that access and expand their horizons. So that's what I see it as. It's
fantastic. Yeah. Thank you, Penny. I think there's no better words to end our podcast. It's been an absolute honor to have you. I always say we need more female role models in logistics, and you certainly are one of them. Thank you so much for sharing all this, for taking the time, and we will all keep a lookout for your career path and surely get inspired by it. Thank you very much for having us and joining the tribe, Penny.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And it has been my great honor to meet you and to hear about what you're doing and join the tribe. So thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Penny.
All right. That was the Logistics Tribe podcast episode with Penny Register Shaw from Walmart. I don't know about you, but I really, really enjoyed listening to this conversation. If you did too, then consider giving us a positive review on Apple Podcasts. That will help other people find us more easily. And please subscribe to the Logistics Tribe podcast so you don't miss any of the future episodes. I'm Boris Felgendreher. Until next time.